Warning, the Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. And here he is, Michael Savage.
We are, by and large, a nation of immigrants. We must remember that the blood of immigrants flows through all of our veins.
I want to join my colleague who thanked the president for enabling us to gather here.
Si se puede. Si se puede. Si se puede. Si se puede. American traits, all of the immigrants make America more American. Thank you for making America
more American. Sold American, that's right. Nancy Pelosi and her friends have put America on the auction block and sold it to the highest bidders. Apparently, Mexico was the highest bidder. Down the line, of course, there are others who are on the auction block. Soon you'll be on the auction block. It's a sort of reversal of the... Well, let me just stop right there. It's a family show. I was going to ask you this question today. Why did Obama pick Yellen for the head of the Fed? What are you afraid that Yellen is going to be Yellen? And, you know, it's a clever question. We know who she is. She's a money printer. She's fundamentally a bright kid from Brooklyn who brown-nosed her way into one job after another. You know the type. We all went to high school with that type. They ran for GO. They were smart. They could memorize things. But they never worked. This one never worked, rather, at any job. She never produced a product or a service that anyone actually needed. And she's, of course, in charge of printing money for Obama. Obama is sort of a maniac. Obama is a monomaniac who knows nothing but printing money. He doesn't know how to create a service or a product that anyone in the world needs. And he doesn't know how to manage anything. He knows how to BS the public. He's very good at BSing the ignoramuses out there. That he's good at. And she's going to print money to keep the whole thing going, just floating. So I don't want to talk about it. I decided to blow it off. I decided to blow it all off. Given the sad state of our Congress today, that someone as deranged as Pelosi could be in the on the National Mall at a time when they closed it to Vietnam vets and World War II vets and opens it up to non-citizens, at a time like this that she is not arrested for a thing like that, I decided that instead I'm going to simply satirize Nancy Pelosi and others on the show today in the great spirit of John Dryden, the true end of satire is the amendment of vice by correction. And he who writes honestly is no more an enemy to the offender than the physician to the patient when he prescribes harsh remedies to an inveterate disease. Now, I realize that that was written in 1681 by John Dryden when people were far more literate than the college uneducated masses that we have in America today who probably didn't even understand what I just said. Let's eliminate the 50% of Americans who can't read English. Now let's leave the rest of you who actually went to college or went to high school. I'll bet you never heard of John Dryden. You don't know what I just said. But nevertheless, I know what I just said, and that is about satire, and it's an introduction to a book I wrote many years ago in 2006, published in 06, called The Political Zoo. And the kids, the young men who worked for me said, Michael, why don't you just go back to that book and pick the people who are ruining America today, Pelosi, Feinstein, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, Al Gore, Jesse Jackson, John Kerry, John McCain, Bill O'Reilly, Harry Reid, Al Sharpton, and George Soros, amongst others. And why don't you give the audience a taste of what you can do that no one else could do in the media? Those who continue every day, day in, day out, day in, day out, Dem, Republican, Republican, Dem, with no finesse, no nothing. Young people turn the shows off. So I'll start with Nancy Pelosi. Leftist irrationalist. Now, remember, I have a background as a biologist, so I had to use Latin binomials for all of these characters in the political zoo. Nancy Pelosi, I called the distempered rainbow parakeet, the distempered rainbow parakeet, and her Latin binomial is leftist irrationalis. Let me read it to you, see what you think. With its large beak and small head, the distempered rainbow parakeet caws with great frequency and volume, yet lacks mental capacity to emit anything original or intelligent. Fortunately, the bird has developed an adaptation that helps it to cope with this problem. The beak's large upper mandible is notched for its little bird foot to fit in. Decked with bright blue plumage, the female of the species mates for life usually with strong and crafty males, capable of building large nests and stashing a surplus of fruits and nuts therein. Not only does this preserve the pair from want, but also frees the female to spend nearly all of its waking hours bobbing through the jungle, screeching at any animals not of its flock, and pretending to care about those who have no nests and food at all. Although its original habitat was Maryland, the breed has since migrated to the San Francisco Bay Area, where it aggressively climbed a political pecking order. Today it can be found both in California and Washington, D.C., chirping away mindlessly in either environ. Curiously, aside from its lower-than-average intelligence, the parakeet suffers from one prominent congenital disability. It is only capable of flapping about in circles, primarily because it is born with only a left wing. I think it's funny. It's Nancy Pelosi. Perhaps it's just not fitting in with the political climate today. But I'll keep going on. If by now you haven't realized that the chattering charlatan Nancy Pelosi or Lugosi to Republicans, it's not the brightest bird in the rainforest, then you're dimmer than she is. Not that she's all feathers and no brains. In an impressive show of strategic intelligence, several decades ago, the rainbow parakeet pecked out a wealthy and ambitious mate and hitched onto his green-hued tail feathers in a flight from her native Baltimore to San Francisco. There, as the couple feathered their nest with a lucrative real estate business, she was able to pursue politics and develop a nicely feigned concern for the poor. The daughter of a Baltimore mayor, this parakeet set her sights on ruling the Democratic nest in a West Coast habitat. Amazingly, when she first ran for the House, she ran to the right of San Francisco supervisor Harry Britt. But then again, as a gay activist and a member of the Democratic Socialist Organizing Committee, Britt didn't leave much room to the left. Over time, as the district grew gayer and grayer, thus blonder, the adaptive congresswoman took on a rainbow hue. Today, as the House Minority Leader, this was written when she was, Nancy Lugosi is the out-front representative for the Democrats in the House of Representatives. Politically, that's about as attractive as having Janet Reno represent Victoria's Secret. But who could disagree that this old bird has finally arrived? As the chief parakeet on the perch, nattering Nancy never lets an opportunity slide to squawk out a few passing shots at the political opposition. Tell her, for instance, that there's been an upturn in the economy, and she'll chirp that it's at the expense of those who don't have jobs. An announcement of a new medical breakthrough will inspire her to cackle about its slowness in coming and the lack of universal health coverage. For all her native color, she tends to think in black and white. When asked about a Democratic plan of action, she responded boldly, "Why should we put a plan out? Our plan is to stop him. He must be stopped." This discretion has nothing to do with valor, because the he had nothing to do with Osama bin Laden or al-Zarqawi. The he is her president, or at least the president at that time, George Bush. And we went on with that. As the animal keepers here at the zoo have noted, unless the rainbow parakeet's beak is clamped, it's difficult to keep it from squawking. Not too long ago, this bird boldly proclaimed, apparently before checking with her staff, her congressional colleagues, or even the newspapers, that the war in Afghanistan was over. When she saw the jaws of the journalists in attendance hit the ground, she finally asked, "I assume the war in Afghanistan is over, or is the contention you have that it continues?" Also recently, when the U.S. Supreme Court ruled that state and local governments could use eminent domain to take nests of private citizens and turn them over to birds of a brighter feather, the rainbow real estate queen confused could with had to. She apparently presumed that since it was the court liberals who voted for this decision, they did so infallibly as always. Not missing a beat, this parakeet loyally chirped that the Supreme Court decision was almost as if God had spoken. For the court's decision to be challenged, she insisted that a constitutional amendment was needed. Imagine how the rainbow parakeet felt when she was reminded that hers is supposed to be the party of the little people, and besides, the decision did not affect a state's ability to limit eminent domain. What's more, one particular state already had a law in the books to accomplish just that. What state was that, you ask? California. one of the few states that Pelosi had actually heard of, and a portion of which she is alleged to represent. And while Republicans sat in grateful, wide-eyed amazement at her appropriately parakeet brain suggestions, even a Democratic staffer admitted to the Capitol Hill Press, a generation of Schoolhouse Rock gets this and she doesn't. And if her current high perch is not enough to induce a national case of vertigo, imagine the state of affairs should her party retake Congress. The rainbow parakeet would most likely emerge as Speaker of the House, third in line for the most powerful position in the world's pecking order. Whatever your misgivings about the people in power, I'd be down on my knees praying that, he's no longer in office. If this parakeet was ever allowed to turn the Oval Office into the Rainbow Room, you and I would be reminiscing about the good old days of the Clinton era. That's my little write-up on Nancy Pelosi. When I come back on the Savage Nation, we will hear about the others. The others will include Bill O'Reilly, Harry Reid, and others. But before you turn the radio to the other dial to find out what the others are not saying, let me give you a little peek at what they're going to be called. Harry Reid I called the Nevada Desert Kangaroo Rat, better known as Mouseite Pugilisticus. I have other names for other people, and I'll be back to give them to you right here on the Savage Nation.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
It is the Savage, and I own the night. Welcome to the Savage Nation. That was a good movie, by the way. We Own the Night. I like that movie. So anyway, that's the story. Here we are. The tourist was killed in Washington, and you forgot it already. What can you do about it? It's a cover-up job. So I'm not going to talk about it again. You know, the battle going on in Washington. You know why many of you are tuning out? You turn in talk radio. I listened to it in the car today on the way to lunch with a young guy who works. And I asked him, he's 25. And I said to him, what are you listening to? He said, I can't even follow it. I don't know what they're talking about. And I don't know which side is a bigger liar. That's what he said. And he's a conservative kid. His father's a policeman. He grew up listening to me and he didn't know what they were talking about. He was listening to Wallbanger with an unknown guest and he didn't know what they were saying. And he said it reminded him of a teacher who invites another teacher into the class as a guest, and then they have a conversation amongst themselves, and they forget their students in the room. That's what talk radio is becoming, a host talking to a guest, and the audience is left out of it. You understand why we're having a problem? So I could do entertainment, but I don't really want to do that now. So someone asked me, well, let's go to Tom on KSVO. Tom, you related to the political zoo on Nancy Pelosi. What's your comment, please?
I love my favorite of your books is The Political Zoo, so I've just been chomping at the bit for the opportunity to give you the zoological name for Obama.
Oh, hold on. Okay, you want me to give you one, or you have one?
I have one to give you.
Go ahead.
Teleprompterist. Recitus.
Not bad. And what would the bird be? The big-eared what? The big-eared toucan?
Probably an albatross.
Oh, that is not bad. The big-eared albatross. Okay, let's make a note for the revision. The big-eared albatross. I would name him Marxus Canis. I'd give him a Latin binomial. Marxus Canis would be good. But I like yours, Teleprompterus Recitus. Tom, thank you. So you still remember the political zoo, huh?
Yeah, I pick it up when I need a good laugh because, you know, just each section's only a couple pages. You can read it, get a good laugh, and go
okay,
on.
So here's let's open it up to the audience. Which new political characters would you add to the political zoo if you were saying Savage, add this one or that one, and what would they be named? Phone number is 855-400-7282, 855-400-SAVAGE. Here's one for you, Tom, and everyone else. What do you think I will call John Boehner in the new book, The Political Zoo, if I ever do one? Is he there? Tom is gone? Okay. I would name John Boehner Mantanus Ineffectus. Mantanus Ineffectus. I don't know what kind of bird he would be, but how could you not like John Boehner with that nice consistent tan, that gravelly voice, the nice suits? John Boehner reminds me somewhat of like a bygone era, which is why he's comforting. He's like comfort food. He's sort of like the television series called Mad Men. He's like an advertising man from the 60s, John, isn't he? That's why he's likable. to the average person. You can ridicule them all you want, but you know what? I don't know if anyone could do a better job. You know, you get up there and you start screaming and yelling at the other side, and what are you going to get? You think the people are going to follow you? You'll get the people who believe in you to follow you, but you're going to alienate that huge core of independents who right now has turned on Obama. The independents have turned on the Democrats. Believe it or not, Obama's ratings are in the toilet. They're the lowest they've ever been, and for good reason. The reason his ratings are low is because he made one critical error. His meanness came through. The Grinch came through. When he closed the National Mall to the World War II vets and to the Vietnam vets, it spread through the country like a prairie fire. And then today, when he opened it up, rather yesterday, to the Si Se Puede organizations, you wait and see what it is tomorrow. The people hate him. They don't like what he's doing to this country. They don't like that he's shutting the government down. They got it that he's doing it. Never mind what the fools in the media are trying to tell you. So there's another character in, let's go to Bridget on WABC. Bridget, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Oh, hi, Michael. My name is Bridget James. I live in New Jersey. I want to say, first of all, I know you probably don't like these calls. Congratulations on the birth of your granddaughter. And God.
Oh, yes, thank you. That's very sweet.
Forever. In my garage, in my car, when I take my son to swim lessons, and my daughter back and forth just trying to make it here in New Jersey. But I love your stories. My father was a World War II vet. I moved from Texas 22 years ago. I married a great man from Brooklyn, 55, and we're doing...
Wait, don't tell me he's dead now, that you listen to me because he died. I hope that's not what you're going to say.
Listen, from Bay Ridge, the old stomp...
No, wait, are you saying he's dead? He died and you listen to me because he's dead, or he's living?
Oh, no.
Oh, thank God. No, if I got a call like that, it would be like Miss Lonely Hearts.
No.
Like, Michael, I love you. Remind me of the husband I once had who I buried a number of years ago. That would be a great call.
Listen, you're a talented, God bless you.
Do you know what I called Maureen Dowd in the political zoo?
Oh.
Battleaxia fossilis. The capuchin organ grinder monkey, with its bright shock of red hair and heavily alkaline tongue, is adored by the media elite for playing some of the left's favorite songs.
Listen, congratulations on getting it through. You have...
Though this Paris Hilton of prose can only play simple tunes, it's funny. Hey, Bridget, thank you. I dig it. I get it. I love it.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-7282. Savage.
It is the Savage Nation. Taking a slight satirical turn tonight, given that you're all exhausted to death from the same old rhetoric, as important as it may be. Talk radio is not a history lesson. Talk radio is not a political organ. Talk radio is not supposed to be boring. Talk radio is supposed to be entertaining. At the end of the day, never forget that talk radio is an entertainment medium. Now, either you have the E gene or you don't have the E gene. I was born with the E gene, and some aren't. And those who don't have it should never, ever try it. Ever. I heard WB try it today. It was painful. It was painful. That's all I can tell you. By the way, a poll was taken on a small station in Medford, Oregon, of whether they should keep the banger, the WB, on or replace him with me come January. And as of airtime, I was winning 52% to what, 45, 48, something like that, of they want me on the station. If you're in the market for W Medford, WMED, you can vote to move Savage to the live slot if you wish. I mean, you want to turn it into a contest. Anyway, if you want to join us on the satirical road tonight, here's one. John Kerry, Flipper Floppus. The Flipper family of toothless dolphins luxuriate in the protected coves of Cape Cod, Martha's Vineyard, and the south of France. This species has no established habitat or pattern of behavior, but rather follows the prevailing current, usually in the shallowest water it can find. Thus, it has found the perfect home for itself in Wishy, Washington. When domesticated, the toothless dolphin is capable of performing amazing tricks, most notably the double flip-flop, which has both amazed and flabbergasted onlookers for years. Not particularly motivated to fend for itself, it has a talent for riding in the wake of creatures with deeper pockets, particularly females of the flipper phylum. Scientists have recently discovered that the toothless dolphin is not as advanced in intelligence as the general populace once believed, ranking well below even below average elephants. and less than the average donkey, hard as that is to believe. Whether he's shilling for Al Jazeera or pandering to MoveOn.orgasm, you can bet that when the political winds hit him in the tail, John Flipper Carey, the toothless dolphin, will flip around like a weather vane and whistle the stars and stripes forever. That's not bad. Anyway, that's John Kerry. It's good. Some of it's good. Some of it's not, you know, relevant anymore. It could be rewritten. I'm not going to rewrite it. You know, I can't go over old ground. Who would you like me to do? Harry Reid, Mouse Eye, Pugilisticus? I won't be visiting Las Vegas in the near future, but I will read the Harry Reid entry. I will not be going to any fights at the MGM Grand in the near future. Harry Reid, Mouse Eye, Pugilisticus. The Nevada Desert Kangaroo Rat earned its name from its repeated jumping from position to position and its rodent-like zeal for subversion and destruction. The kangaroo rat is one of the most lethal animals in the political zoo, not for anything it actually does, but for the progressive plague it spreads that is known to paralyze and destroy the body politic. Scientists haven't yet confirmed if the disease is caused by the special interest fleas carried by the rat or if it's found in the odorous policy droppings that it leaves behind. I could see why John Dryden had to write what he wrote in 1681, which I put at the front of the book. So let me read that again. The true end of satire is the amendment of vice by correction. And he who writes honestly is no more an enemy to the offender than the physician to the patient when he prescribes harsh remedies to an inveterate disease. Yeah, not bad. Now, who else is in the news today? Ruth Bader Ginsburg is in the news. If you can believe it, she's actually still on the Supreme Court. If you can believe it, she is still on the Supreme Court. I gave her this name, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, litigatus agitatus. Ruth Bader Ginsburg, litigatus agitatus. The Bader Gator, a dangerous breed of the combative Litty Gator family, is notorious for clamping down on its constitutional prey and dragging it below the water in a death roll to drown out our freedoms and to feast on them at a later time where no one can see. Native to the legal swamps of New York, this unseemly creature is easily the most aggressively progressive animal on the political zoo's kangaroo court and regularly tries to subvert the zoo's rules. Strangely, the Bader Gator seems to long even for the brutal controls of foreign zoos and circuses, where animals, particularly elephants, are regularly abused. The Bader Gator is known to have an extraordinarily long lifespan. Not bad. When Bill Clinton nominated Ruth Bader Ginsburg to replace Byron White as Associate Justice of the Supreme Court in 1993, there was very little protest by Senate Republicans, despite the fact that they were about to confirm one of America's most radical attorneys to the highest court of the land. In fact, she breezed through the confirmation process and in less than 6 weeks was approved 96-3. Even at that time, her extremist views were well known. The Bader Gator had served as the chief litigator for the Women's Rights Project of the ACLU and served on their National Board of Directors. During her tenure, this board called for the repealing of laws against child pornography and the decriminalization of adult child sex. If NAMBLA had a pinup girl, an oxymoronic concept, I admit, the Bader Gator would probably be it. It's a horrible image regardless. Shall I go on? So don't think I don't know politically where they stand. I know exactly who they are. I've got their histories in here. But it's done with a different flavor than I think people are. They're not into it today. I think they're more didactic today than even in 2005, to be frank. I think there's less room for humor than there was. Even, what, 05 to now? When is that? 9? I can't even do the math. 8 years ago. What a long time this has been. Bill Maher, loudmouthus liberalitis. The Southern California screeching weasel is a timid but noisy creature, keen on annoying many of the other animals in the zoo. Although often posing as a predator, this weak, mostly herbivorous rodent has teeny teeth, no claws, shrunken reproductive organs, and wholly relies on the support of more productive animals for its meager existence. Its natural habitat is primarily the dark and smoky corners of little mines, but it has been known to venture into the light of respectable discourse until frightened back into its hole by bigger, more intelligent species. Its mating habits consist of noncommittal relationships with exhibitionist females. Because of its failure to either willfully or successfully reproduce, this pathetic little creature faces extinction. That's not bad. The twisted reality of Bill Maher is seen in the basic premise of his two television shows, Politically Incorrect, Cancel in 02, and Real Time with Bill Maher, currently on HBO, where he tries to marry the cynicism of pop culture to the real-life world of national politics. By randomly selecting celebrities, pop icons, and actual political figures, the challenge is to tell them apart. Here's a hint. The politicians are the less attractive of the adults. The Screeching Weasel has created the perfect postmodern program where everyone's opinion counts, no matter how inane, bizarre, or flat-out crazy it might be. It's sort of Meet the Press meets the French Revolution. Nobody can match. Nobody's as good as you know, when I want to be good, when I have the mind for it. So the last one now that I'll do from the reading of the Political Zoo, the cover's interesting. It shows me as the zookeeper, a caricature of me as the zookeeper. And each person is caricatured in this book. I should reissue it probably. Some of it's good. John McCain, Stockholmus blemishii. Stockholmus blemishii. The turncoat mole is a crafty creature that is quick to switch pack allegiances without any observable reason to do so. It regularly eats from the lower ends of the food chain, but constantly harasses any other animal choosing to do so. In 2000, the turncoat mole was all but exterminated from the national scene when it tried to root itself into the hostile habitat of South Carolina. It retreated to Arizona and is now making gestures to go national once again. This was, remember, when this book was written. The turncoat mole sometimes hunts in tandem with the Senate snakes, with at least a few moles being eaten for dinner in exchange for looking bipartisan. Perhaps its chief natural weakness is that it is blind to how its burrowing undermines the principles of the party pack. It's interesting. Yeah, well, you see, we knew who the turncoat mole was back even in 2005, and I know many of you are sensitive to what he was put through. And that doesn't matter. It doesn't give him a pass. Finally, we will continue with one last one at the moment. And you could join the conversation by calling 855-407-282. 855. Now tell me which current political figure you would like to see me put in a revised edition of the Political Zoo and what their Latin binomial might be. So we'll conclude this segment with none other than the leprechaun, Bill O'Reilly, who I named, and now you know why I've never been invited on Fox News since. I have a way of making friends in high places, I got to tell you that. One thing you got to say about old Mike is old Savage knows how to make friends in high places. And now you understand why O'Reilly never forgave me and never, ever permitted anyone of the leg crossers to have me on a Fox News after the Political Zoo came out. Because I called him the following, Lecheris leprechaunus. Top mammal in the Fox News pundit cage, the American porcupine is a large terrestrial rodent, well protected by its prickly exterior. When challenged, it erects its quills, swings its stout tail, and threatens to release the barbed tips into challenger's skin. Known for its grunting or groaning delivery, the porcupine is active mainly at night and is found occasionally on televisions in the sagebrush plains of the West. Also, according to legal filings that were settled, the American porcupine will occasionally try to find cable station staff willing to play games like Fetch the Loofah as part of its bizarre mating ritual. Everyone's forgotten the loofah incident. I forgive him for it, truthfully. I don't forgive him for being an obnoxious dictatorial jerk bent on hectoring and humiliating anyone he doesn't agree with. In that sense, he's no different than everyone else in the media. From his cage at the no spine zone, he lets loose like a porcupine on Percocet with his trademark smugness and patented sneer, regularly welcoming movers and shakers from the Beltway and beyond, threatening to boycott entire countries, barking nonsense about everything from the war in Iraq to the war on Christmas. This newsy numbskull maintains that his dubious popularity is due to his, pardon while I clear my throat, common sense approach to politics and culture. No, Porky, I think people watch your show for the same reason they go to NASCAR races, to see the wrecks. In the world of serious political commentary, the O'Reilly factor is no factor at all. Okay, yeah, there's a bit of bit of whatever in here, vitriol, I admit, but that's what satire is supposed to be. Let's see, one last one here. Since it's about the sexual harassment that they settled. Since settling the lawsuits, the O'Reilly factor is more a no-skin zone than a no-spin zone. But until blah, 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 until then, a word of warning to all you ladies out there in the Savage Nation. If you phone O'Reilly's show during porcupine mating season, which lasts from about January to December, do your best to sound like Janet Reno, avoid the subjects of Greek food and cleansing devices, and above all, steer clear of the porcupine's biggest turn-on, namely himself. A porcupine in heat is a dangerous beast. If he loves you, you'll be able to count the ways. In fact, you'll be able to count them by the thousands while you pluck them the morning after. Oh, oh, I can see why I've never been allowed on Fox News ever since. I had no idea. I didn't know it was this personal. What new characters can we add to the... it isn't still available. People think that I'm like the other host. I'm not peddling a book, no. No, you cannot buy the Savage toupee. No, you can't buy the conservative shoes. You can't buy the conservative floor mat. No, we don't have a conservative nail file kit. No coffee mugs. No mats. No nothing. Nothing. I decided to. I don't want to sell anything, personally, unless they're an advertiser on the show. That's another story. Or when I have a new book, yes. But now that I'm mentioning it, I'm actually going to put out a CD for Christmas, now that I think about it, with all of my favorite stories in a two-disc set. It'll be up in a couple of, I think by November something. All the family stories, Dead Man's Pants, they're all going to be read by me. And in a very inexpensive two-disc set for the holidays. But other than that, there's no point to it. How much money does a person actually need? 855-400-7282 is the Savage Nation. If you care to join the satire that we're doing today on the political scene, all you got to do is dial that number. And I may change course into either hard politics or soft politics or movie reviews or film reviews or movie reviews or film reviews or book reviews or food reviews or Chinese buffet reviews the minute I return right here on the Savage Nation.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
It is the Savage. What in the heck is today? Wednesday, October 9th, 2013. October 9th, 2013. So how many days till January? October. It's less than like 80 days now. 80 days to countdown. Someone asked me, what am I going to do on my first show? You know, and I said, I don't know, and nothing unique. I will do something unique. I thought about it in the toilet this morning. And I said, you know, you shouldn't have said nothing. Do something special. What, I don't know, but I will come up with something unique. Frankly, this would have been a good show. The Political Zoo, this would have been a good show to introduce myself to millions of a new audience. Millions of new people. Meanwhile, on the internet, rank number one, Savage, 13.1 share. And Hannity, number 7 with a 4.4 share. Oh, yeah, I know, it doesn't really matter. Yeah, right, doesn't really matter. It's a small sample. Okay, fine. Nothing matters all of a sudden. But when Obama's ratings go down in a small poll, all of a sudden it matters. And I'm ranked number 1 and I beat Rush, that doesn't matter. It matters. It matters. So if you go, so do you like what I'm doing tonight, or you want me to go back to regular programming and talk about immigration and Republican and Democrat and Pelosi and Janet Yellen? How much can you take? I have decided, no, I'm not giving away my secrets, so all the other lesser, I can't do it. When I was a plant collector, I used to sit with Fijian women in villages, and they would tell me after a while, after they got to trust me, their folk remedies. They would show me the plant, they would tell me what they used it for, and it was only after I drank the Yangona with them over a number of days with the men that they trusted me in the village, and then they would introduce me to the women folk healers. So I would sit there. And the reason they would share their secrets, the healing secrets, with me and not with a fellow Fijian is because that was their stock in trade, was their ability to use those plants for healing. And usually it came down to them from their mothers or their grandmothers, and they didn't want to give it out to the village because they'd lose their currency. Their currency was they were a folk healer, and they didn't want to give away their power by telling everyone what their secrets were. It's the same with me. I can only, give away so much of what I do and how I do it on the radio, so I don't need to go there and tell everybody how I think and how I get where I am. Because one day I will take the road of Johnny Carson. One day I will go to the big meatloaf in the sky. One day it will be the white hat and the boat ride to the other side. But before then, it may be just the meatloaf. You know, that guy really had it right. I mean, how many years did he retire? Johnny Carson. He died at 78. There's a story about him today with the mob wanted to knock him off. He was in a bar in Manhattan. It was an interesting story. It sounds like nonsense. Mob wanted Johnny Carson dead. I was always intrigued by Johnny Carson's retirement more than his act. I mean, I was younger. I didn't quite get him. I didn't quite get it. The bright little thing he did. I was that smart. I'm not into late night. See, I'm not into reading jokes. And he basically was a great deliverer, and he had writers for him. That's not my shtick. The Mafia put a contract out on Tonight Show host Johnny Carson after he drunkenly tried to pick up a mobster's Gumar in Frank Sinatra's favorite Manhattan bar, according to a new biography of the TV icon. Nonsense. The women who knew what was going on said it's all made up to sell a book. Why not? He's dead. What could he argue? So the thing I like most about Johnny Carson was that he retired when he was at the top. He left when he was at the top. He didn't do a Larry King. He didn't wait till the dentures were falling out. He didn't wait till they said, Larry, I'm sorry. You've been around forever. You're a nice guy, but no one's listening anymore to the garlic breath pitch, Larry. That's sad in a way. And in a way, I admire Larry for sticking it out. Don't get me wrong. You never know, you know. But he left when he was at the top. And I think he got 7-8 years of just dining around, whatever he did. Boating. He was a big boater, I think. I think he lived on a boat in Marina Del Rey, if I'm not mistaken. Whatever, you know, that's not too exciting to me. It's like, dummy, how much can you sit on a boat and get drunk? But I like the idea that he didn't wait to get thrown out. He walked out.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE. Warning. The Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. And here he is, Michael Savage.
The decision on who will succeed, Ben, is one of the most important economic decisions that I'll make as president.
Oh,
one of the most important appointments that any president can make.
Oh, yeah.
Because the chair of the Fed is one of the most important policymakers in the world, and the next chair will help guide our economy after I've left office.
Oh, you're going to leave office? When?
Foremost among them is an understanding of the Fed's dual mandate. Sound monetary policy to make sure that we keep inflation in check,
but also increasing
employment and creating jobs, which
you've done good at that,
our most important economic challenge.
No, you and Ben did that.
I found these qualities in Janet Yellen.
Who?
Oh, the weather outside is frightful, but the fire is so delightful.
So they found another red diaper doper baby from Brooklyn, who has never created a service or a product that anyone ever needed. A lifer inside the Beltway is now going to be the most important money printer in the world. If I put her in the political zoo, I'd have to give her a name. I don't know what to call her yet. Janet Yellen, perhaps. Printeris, something or other. We'll have to figure it out. I can't do that one on the spot. We've been playing around on the Savage Nation in the first hour in a sort of satirical manner, where I was basically reading from a book I did in 2005, not available, not for sale, not selling it, entitled The Political Zoo. In fact, it's strange. It was not one of my bestsellers, but it was probably one of my best books. And I took political figures. I gave them an animal's name in the zoo, the Savage Zoo, the Political Zoo, and then a Latin binomial. So, for example, I've asked you to call with who you would put in and what you'd call them, and we're going to get some callers in a minute, really good ones. I'll read one that I wrote back in 05, Jimmy Carter. Everyone remembers him, right? I named him Marxist Peanut Farm Era. The big-toothed muskrat is a particularly nasty rodent that, while indigenous to the southeastern United States, is known to appear as an endemic type in San Francisco, Boston, Manhattan, Austin, and as far north as Toronto, Canada, wherever socialists of the species gather. Though rarely productive in its first few stages of life, the big-toothed muskrat is never sedentary and develops into more of a nuisance than the older it gets. It is prone to attack fellow rodents to demonstrate its continued potency and destroys the natural balance of power in the ecosystem by inexplicably siding with vicious foreign predators against its own species. This rodent is never shrill, preferring to disarm his enemies with a non-display of his muted colors, and feeds primarily on the preys of giant rats. A cunning beast, the big-toothed muskrat, will build an occasional shelter for other animals, at least when photographers are present. This way, when it helps steal what other animals have worked hard to forage, and disperses it to those animals too dull or slothful to forage for themselves, no one will question the muskrat's basic instincts. Mating for life, this critter bonds sexually with the opposite gender solely to reproduce, joining with the female of the species just once or twice in a lifetime. God. That's so close to probably what's true that the satire rings true. Most people consider James Earl Carter good and decent. He doesn't drink. He doesn't gamble. He's been married to the same female for the past 70 years. And unlike our most recent Democratic president, that was then, this big-toothed muskrat doesn't even smoke cigars. As he told Playboy magazine so many years ago, the only place he's lusted is in his heart, and certainly not in the small galley of the Oval Office. Besides, who would have him? It's largely because of those qualities, highly unusual on the side of the forest where any permanent mating with a female is becoming newsworthy, that he was elected the 39th president of the United States. Still, the fact that he is good, decent, and married to the same mate for umpteen years should not qualify him for the highest office in the land. If this were all it took to be elected president, I say we should all vote for my next-door neighbor, Carl. He's all of that, and more. My neighbor doesn't smoke, drink, or batter rabbits. Plus, he's tolerant. If all the other women in the world looked like my neighbor Carl's wife, Marge, Rosalind Carter would be on Baywatch. Carl, bless his heart, calls Marge his Italian bombshell, but it could be because of the pockmarks on her face. In truth, she looks less like Sophia Loren than she does Danny DeVito, though to be fair, he's got better legs and is cleaner shaven. Marge, however, does have a common touch. When she becomes First Lady, she'll replace Nancy Reagan's China with some good old-fashioned U.S. Navy plates. I actually like U.S. Navy plates that you can count on. So let's all get out and stump for neighbor Carl. He's a saint already. Let's make him president. Carl would surely govern better than the pain from planes. With the mighty muskrat at the helm, the United States was tossed into a tailspin of gross overspending, monumental inflation, and an oil and gasoline crisis that made even the post-Katrina madness seem like a bargain hunter's paradise. This is pretty good. In fact, some of it is still relevant. This is The Savage Nation. I'm reading from an old book of mine called The Political Zoo. I think you can only find it on the Internet. And some of the characters are no longer with us. They've gone to heaven, I suppose. Look at the people who passed away. Arlen Specter, no longer here. Howard Stern, no longer here. No longer here in the sense that no one knows who he is anymore. At the time, Howard Stern was on the radio. Now no one knows where he is. Apparently he's on a game show somewhere, but he got my goat to the point that I put him in here. Let me see what I wrote about. I don't remember. Who remembers him? I actually liked Howard Stern when he first came along. Then he became too impressed with himself, and he became awful. Howard Stern, Schlocko Jocko. This colorful, gangly creature is a mutant strain of the Long Island parrot, or LIP species, bred accidentally on one of the island's many toxic waste sites. The LIP has an uncanny ability to mimic the most vile comments that it hears and play them back with an added layer of verbal sewage. Preferring to jabber on early in the morning, the LIP spends the rest of its day scavenging the New York City waste system for new tidbits to repeat for its next morning's appearance. Although this sewer spewer boasts that he cannot be tamed, his vision is impaired to the fact that he is the favorite pet of global media monkeys who quietly program his every spontaneous syllable. That's not bad. And we'll end it right there. In the Political Zoo, we'll now go to the callers on the Savage Nation, and we'll take your nominees. Let us begin on WABC in New York, where John has a character he'd like to see in a future edition of the Political Zoo. John, welcome to the program. Who is it that you'd like to see, and what is his name?
Governor Christie, while meeting with Barack Obama right after Sandy hit New Jersey, Maximus disastrous.
I have the best audience in America. That's very funny. Yeah, he kind of lost his mojo, didn't he? Once he bent over for Obama,
without a doubt. And the animal would be the leopard in the jungle, who changes his spots.
Who, Christie? Yeah, I think we'd have to play on Christie's size in order. If we put, he definitely would have to be a hippo or something like that.
Okay.
All right, John. Thanks for playing along on the Savage Nation. 855-407-282 is the Savage. No one's criticizing any Republicans here. Now, look, my book was bipartisan in its satire. I mean, it wasn't all criticism. That's another reason I'm not allowed on Fox, is that I attacked, whatever his name is, the guy, O'Reilly. But I ripped into Rudy Giuliani, who I actually think is terrific. He just became too Rudy for me and a little less Giuliani. That's really what happened. If he had stayed more Giuliani and became less Rudy, I would have liked him more. But let's see. I'm looking at Republicans that I may have picked on in this book. Dick Cheney was picked on. Let's see. Another Republican picked on was Harry Belafonte. No, that's a joke. A few others are in there. Rush Limbaugh. Okay, I could see why he doesn't like me for what I said about him. But he's going to be my lead, and I'm actually going to start liking Rush Limbaugh starting in January. I'm going to change my opinion. Imagine Kim Jong-il was in the book, and he's no longer with us. I called him Mini Maoen, Maoen, M-A-O-I-E-N, Mini Maoen. The short-necked salamander is a stocky, pudgy lizard with sturdy limbs and a long, expansive, extremely dangerous tail. The body color of this sly creature is brown and irregularly marked with yellow to olive-colored blotches. Yeah, this is pretty good, but he's no longer with us. May he rest in Hades. The short-necked salamander. We did John Kerry. Who did we not get to? Madonna and Gwyneth. Strippus pretentious and skinum bonus. The varying species of the red dodo, as exemplified by this young chick and old buzzard, are endangered in this part of the world and verging on extinction, or at least irrelevance. The red dodo's mating habits are indiscriminate and indecent, although the older of the species mates much more frequently and with much more exotic breeds. As the senior bird of this species ages, though, it tends to settle down, builds a nest and family, and will even take its younger counterpart under its wing, where it teaches its protege how to desecrate its native habitat and defecate on sacred statues and memorials. The younger bird then nourishes itself on the elder's droppings. Both birds, however, adhere to the same migratory route, flying the American coop for grayer pastures, presumably because of England's reputation for great weather, terrific food, and world-class dentistry. I think it's clever. It's very funny. I hope you're enjoying it. It's a little change for me, and I hope it's a little entertaining for you. This is the Savage Nation. I would say that this is unique to the media. It has a certain degree of literacy, which is shocking. It may even be banned, for all I know, because literacy is the last thing you'd expect in talk radio. But occasionally, I must tell you, I have to fight the education I have and my background almost on a daily basis to do the show. It's not like I'm talking down to you, but you have to speak in the common parlance to the listener. But occasionally, I have to let you know that there's sort of another part of my brain that isn't nourished, which is what I'm doing tonight. I'm nourishing it, and I hope that I'm striking a chord with many of you who are brain dead from all of the venom that we hear coming out of the media on a daily basis. Let's go to Robert on WBOB for his candidate for the next political zoo. Robert, welcome to the program. Go ahead, please.
All right, I thought about Ted Cruz. If the Cruzatino Hibiscus.
Wait a minute. You don't like Ted Cruz, I get it. You name him who? Venomous Hibiscus?
Yes.
But what is it you don't like about Ted Cruz? Tell me.
Oh, actually, I love him. But I think it's a pretty plant. But if I don't watch it, his bite's going to be venomous.
Well, Ted Cruz is the only one who has the nerve to actually do what the people want done. The taxpayers like Ted Cruz. But what you're actually calling him venomous hibiscus because you're doing it as a positive statement, correct?
Yes.
Uh-huh. Well, you're so sarcastic, I didn't even get that. Thanks for the call. 855-400. Oh, here's a killer. This is about Peter King, who was once an admired politician in my book, who became a lunatic over the last 6 months. I don't understand what happened to Peter King. He's another one like McCain, who was once a guy I looked up to. He's like a... Peter King struck me as an NYPD detective type who went into politics, the kind I would normally gravitate to, that I would trust. And then something happened. He became like a complete left-wing nut. Diane, on WABC, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Magnus, hypocritus, doofus.
I take it that you wouldn't vote for Peter King if he ran for the presidency.
You know, I used to admire him. And everything out of his mouth now is like pure left.
What is that? What happened to Peter King? Tell me, Diane, because you obviously know he's a hypocrite and a doofus. What happened to him?
Maybe somebody got to him and gave him a little gelt. I have no idea.
Oh, we have a woman with a little knowledge of the inside world of Boardwalk Empire here. Yeah, I know something's wrong. Why does he come out for war like a lunatic with the Syria thing? And all of a sudden now he thinks he can be president? How is that possible?
That could be it. I don't know. But I'll tell you, it makes me nauseous the way he totally ranted I can't think of his name now all of a sudden. You know,
who? Wallbanger? Wallbanger?
No, the one that stood up to...
Wait, when he attacked Ted Cruz.
I
don't understand. Well, they're afraid of the Tea Party Republicans because the Tea Party Republicans are not part of the establishment. Look, it's really what it is. Both parties are clubs. They're very well oiled, the most powerful clubs in the United States are the Democrat and Republican clubs. Let's put it that way. So you got two clubs that fake it, make believe that they're opposing each other when in fact they all meet afterwards and go to dinner together. I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE. 855-400-7282. Savage.
Yes. Shut down a schmut down. How about a smut down? Can we get rid of the smut? This is going to come to an end. And what's the next scandal going to be? It's always a scandal, always something that was... You know, we're part of the problem when you think about it. We, the people, are part of the problem because we react to it. We feed on it. Those of us who are very political, we feed on this. It's like they think, okay, I'll do this and I'll get them mad, or I'll do that and I'll make them happy. And we react to it. I mean, it's part of the answer is to just ridicule them, to be satirical and just, you know, basically don't respect them. The greatest power you have over the political class is to disrespect them. Do you understand that? Why I wrote a book of satire years ago? Is you got to disrespect them. What are you looking up to them for? Most of them are lowlifes. Most of them are on medication. Most of them hate the republic. Most of them have contempt for the people. Most of them are lowlife grifters who are in it simply for the spoils of war. So what are you looking up to them for? That's all. Ridicule them. It's the greatest power you have is ridicule. That's what I think. That's why this show has gone through or will go through the biggest shakeup in talk radio history. Now, come January, when I move to the big time slots, you know what my message is going to be every day: borders, language, culture. Now, that is a novel set of words to the political class. When have you last heard even the Tea Party members say borders, language, and culture? Like, never? Think about what I just said. I've been preaching borders, language, and culture since I began in radio in 1994, when I was forced to define how a nation is defined. Being trained in using succinct language as a science writer, I said, okay, borders, language, and culture, after much thought. I don't think anyone's beaten my definition of how a nation is defined. Do you? Borders, language, culture. That could change the course of the election.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE. 855-400-7282. Savage.
Is the old new Savage Nation. Some nights I take it easy. I mean, like tonight I'm taking it easy. I'm tired of politics, just tired of it. I'm not interested in those people yelling at each other over a shutdown, a close down, a slim down, my down, your down, first down, last down. It's boring. We know what Obama's doing. He's a lunatic. He just wants to print more money and spread out more money for more votes. That's the Democrat socialist viewpoint. Hugo Chavez, Venezuela, that's the model. Buy the poor, buy the votes. Flood the country with illegal aliens, buy them off, get elected, keep the party in power. No concern whatsoever for fiscal realities. On the other hand, you've got the hardcore Tea Party that wants belt tightening, cutting spending. Now, how could you not agree with them in cutting spending? How could you not agree with that? Okay, so that's that. What's the talk about? It's that simple. Now, I've been telling you that Obama's been purging the military of any people in the military who might stand up to him, and I've seen this go on since Benghazi, when he fired three admirals and a general without being, it wasn't even noted in the media. The three admirals who were ready to send help were purged within a week, and one of them was a general who was in charge of the Africa Command. An African-American with 40 years of service to this country was thrown out, and not one word from the rat media. Well, today we learned he fired a three-star admiral. He was the number two nuclear commander. And it sounds to me like ginned up charges. I want to read you what they did. Obama has now purged another admiral out of the Navy. The Navy says a three-star admiral was notified Wednesday that he's been relieved of his duty as second in command at the military organization that oversees all U.S. nuclear forces. So now the AP puts out the lie. He is under investigation in a gambling matter. Now, what does that mean? What is a gambling matter? So I looked into it. You ready for this? Giardina is being reassigned to the Navy staff pending the outcome of a Naval Criminal Investigation Service probe of allegations that he used counterfeit gambling chips at a casino in Iowa, not far from his base in eastern Nevada. Now, Nebraska. The removal of such a high-ranking commander of nuclear forces is extremely rare in the U.S. military. It's never happened before. Obama's purging anybody who does not kowtow to him. I see something ominous here. Now, what do you mean allegations that he used counterfeit gambling chips at a casino in Iowa? I thought we live in America where you're innocent until proven guilty. But to Obama, when you set somebody up like this, they're guilty until he can prove himself innocent. That's what they did in the Soviet Union. When they wanted to purge generals who Stalin was afraid of, they took them out and shot them. Now they take them out and smear them. He used counterfeit gambling chips at a casino in Iowa. What does that mean? It means he was gambling. Somebody set him up. They threw counterfeit chips at him. He threw them on the table. They busted him and said, are these yours? He said, I don't know. And they said, they're yours. You're under arrest for using counterfeit gambling chips. That's how they got rid of him. They smeared him. That's what I think. If I were his defense attorney, that's what I would say. And I guarantee you there's no way to prove this, and he will be found to be innocent, and it'll be too late. Once again, Obama has fired the number two nuclear commander in the Navy, a three-star admiral with many, many years of service. You have to ask yourself, why is Obama purging the military? I think you can put two and two together. Now let's go back to the political zoo, and who you would put in it. We're going to go through all the calls with all of your names, which I'm saving. Sharon on WMAL, you're up on the Savage Nation from Washington, D.C.
Hello, Dr. Savage. Well, I'm not sure about the names yet, but it is some characters I would really like to see in political zoo. That's John Boehner, Valerie Jarrett. Who else? I haven't come up with the name yet. But
John Boehner, we came up with some names for him. Neil, what was the name we came up for John Boehner early? It was funny. Mantanus something. Mantanus Ineffectus. You think that's a funny name for John Boehner?
Yeah, you're good. You come up with some. I mean, you really put some good stuff out there.
You see that? You know, I'm not the only one in the world who thinks we need a break from politics, huh?
Yeah.
You see, I like your laugh. They remind me of my mother's laugh. It's a real belly laugh. In other words, you really know how to enjoy yourself.
Yeah.
You know, Sharon, I'm not even going to ask you whether you're a Democrat or Republican. I could care less. As long as you can enjoy yourself, it's important to me.
Yes, exactly. Well,
thank you very much. It's interesting. I mean, I'd rather she was a conservative. What do I'm going to tell a person what to be. I've tried it for 20 years. A lot of good it did. Look what we have in the White House. I mean, when I think about it, I mean, for 20 years I've been preaching borders, language, and culture. Look where we wound up. A man who's dissolved the borders, has 150 languages available for you to sign up to communist Obamacare. That's language, huh? And culture. When have you last seen him supporting the American cultural base? Zero. He is the antithesis of borders, language, and culture is what we have. How does a small band of hardcore academic leftists take over a country and get away with it? Answer, they own the media and they own academia. That's all. The American people don't like Obama. The American people don't like what the Democrats are doing to the veterans. The American people don't like the fact that the Democrats will not compromise even with the most moderate of Republicans. The Americans don't like the fact that even, look, Eleanor Norton, Holmes Norton in Washington, D.C., a Democrat, she stood up to Obama today and yelled at him. She wouldn't take guff from him. He tried to overtalk her at a private meeting. She said, I want you to take the congressional bill that was passed by the House and reopen certain aspects of the government so I can run the District of Columbia. And he wouldn't listen to her. This man is a Caesar. He is a despot. This is not a leader. This is not a deal maker. This is not a president. This is a despotic radical of the highest order. But I've said it for so many years. What's the point of saying it again? WNIS in Norfolk, Virginia. Steve, who do you have for the political zoo?
Mike, I have the Speaker of the House. His Greek name is non-effectus. Alphasaurus.
No, it's his Latin name. It's his Latin binomial, Nonefectus Alphasaurus. I like that. It's very funny.
The animal name is Barhound. Being as I'm from the Northeast, sons of immigrants.
Yeah, don't run that on the air. That's not right. We don't want to do any ethnic slurs against anybody for any reason. What's the point? I mean, everybody has an ethnic background. You can ridicule anybody on any basis if you wanted to. I think you got to keep it on a little higher level, which is a little, you know, sarcasm, satire. But when you revert back to the ethnic, then what? Yeah, schoolyard bullies, that's all. What else is in the news? I don't know, not much with the biker thing in New York. That was crazy. The bikes surrounding that Chinese family in the SUV, that's unbelievable. Undercover NYPD cop who posed as Occupy Wall Street protester, slapped with upgraded charges and motorcycle mob attack. That's becoming quite a story. Wojciech Brasak, talking about Polish? How did this happen? How did this fit right in my life? Wojciech Brasak, 32, covered in center, was ordered held on a $150,000 bond, $100,000 cash bail after prosecutors upgraded the counts against him, including an assault charge. That's trouble. Claws come out, I'm reading the Daily News, in Joan Rivers' condo catfight. Neighbor accusing comedian of stealing mail and squirting glue into locks says she looks like the Joker in Batman. I would say the biggest nightmare on earth would be to have her as a neighbor in a co-op. Can you imagine having to see her in the elevator every morning for the rest of your life? Can you imagine a curse like that? That's why I don't live in a co-op. First of all, they wouldn't have me. Imagine me trying to pass a co-op board on New York's Upper East Side. Could you imagine if I ever tried to buy a co-op in Manhattan, what would happen, what would go on from these hypocritical liberals? You talk about racism and you talk about spite work. You've seen nothing. Let's say you've been subjected to racism in your life. Well, you don't know what evil is until you faced ridicule and scorn for your political beliefs. It's far worse than any sort of racism you could ever imagine. Because racism is sort of something that people can almost tolerate because they know the person doing it is it like a low-life fool. But the co-op boards are filled with the most vile political types who ferret out. There's no joking allowed, no humor allowed. No, I never applied for a co-op. Never. Look who they think they are because they made a little money. And then they shop in a certain place. Big deal. You ever hang around with the really rich? Remember what he said? Who was the writer who said the rich are different than you and I? They have money. Who was the writer? It was Hemingway's friend. He wrote The Great Gatsby. It'll come to me in a minute. Someone will remember. Anyone know who wrote The Great Gatsby? Anyway, you know, it was a movie, blah, blah, blah. So he wrote that the rich are different than you and I, they have money. But, you know, F. Scott Fitzgerald, yeah, that was an interesting story. I read all of Hemingway, I remember that. I love reading F. Scott Fitzgerald's work. But the rich are different than you and I, they have money. And what that means is that they're just like you and I. Some are good, some are bad, some are smart, some are stupid. You know what I'm saying? Some are vicious, some are pleasant. They're no different. It's as simple as that. It's as though they won a, you know, won a lottery. WMAL in Washington, D.C. Donna, in Washington, you're on the Savage Nation. Who's your nominee for the political zoo?
Debbie Wasserman Schultz.
Whoa, Debbie Wasserman. Who? Come on, you didn't make that up.
No, I didn't.
But that's too good to believe. She is one of the most vile creatures in the political swamp. I've never seen anybody as obnoxious as her in the political scene. She makes Barbara Boxer look like Mary Poppins.
It's just unbelievable.
How could she get away with it? You know, I don't mind a tough woman. I like tough women. I like tough, smart women. I can't stand women who are mean just because they're women and they get away with bullying. She is one of the worst bullies in the history of the Congress. Wasser was a man, Schultz.
Exactly.
So what would you give? What name would you give her for the political zoo? I'm sorry, I didn't mean to step on your words.
No, you're fine. I'm hoping I have the correct definition for here, but I think it's Clutos, and I'm thinking loud lizard, which would be Clutos iguanimos.
Oh, if I were a teacher, you'd get an A plus. Now, why Clutos? What does that refer to?
To be loud. She's loud, obnoxious.
Okay, but why? But where does the word Clutos, from what does it derive?
I believe in the dictionary the meaning to hear, as in loud.
Are you drawing this from a Latin root, Clutos?
Yeah, well, I was thinking about when I looked it up, it was something like that, to hear Clutos or...
Interesting. So you actually got into this whole exercise today.
Oh, I think it's great.
You enjoy. See, I think the women would have liked today's show thus far more than men. Guys are more basic. They want the basic wrestling match. I don't think they're into the esoterics of the political world as, you know, I try today. I can't do this every day. This is something I can do on a rare occasion. I'm not going to do it tomorrow, for example. But I think for today, reading from the Political Zoo was a little fun, don't you?
Absolutely. Dr. Savage, I think it's good therapy.
Why? I do too, but tell me why. Satire is good therapy because, well, for a number of reasons, we get to put them down, which is what they deserve.
Absolutely.
I mean, if I call John McCain Stockholm's blemishite, the turncoat mole, that says it all, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
Okay. Well, thanks for joining the fun tonight on the Savage Nation. I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
Michael Savage, the best hangover for the political flu. Welcome to the program. If you're suffering the political flu, we're trying to inject some satire into the mix tonight. So here's one more for the night, one more for the road. Katie Couric is in the news. Her show is failing. They're about to dump her. $10 million a year. It didn't work. Nobody wants to listen to her interviewing academics. You know, the pseudo-intellectualism has its limits. So I'm looking back. If you think I don't know what's going on in the political, you know, landscape, this is from 2006 by Michael Savage, the political zoo. Katie Couric. I called her Katie Coran Couric. Pert guy annoyous. Pygmy marmosets, PMS, are the smallest and arguably the world's smarmiest monkeys. As such, they have become the favorite pet of morning television talk shows. This particular miniature monkey has for years been trained by its handlers to perform simple tricks in front of the camera. But limited by its proportionately tiny brain, it can only repeat what it sees other simians doing or saying. Thus the phrase, monkey see, monkey do. Though considered cute by many, the pygmy marmoset sports long, fang-like teeth that it flashes when threatened by larger brain mammals, which includes just about all the fauna in the forest and half the flora, for that matter. Perhaps the most profound statement ever made about this performing monkey's television career was by another small furry creature. Recently in Central Park, this is, remember, 10 years ago, a stray dog urinated on an ice sculpture of Couric live on the Today Show. Plans are presently being made to build a monument to honor the courageous canine who aptly communicated what the whole of humanity was thinking. I would urge all readers to generously contribute to this worthy cause. That's awful. It's really quite difficult to describe exactly what talent Katie Coran, the pygmy marmoset, has. This performing primate isn't as stately as Leslie Stahl. She really isn't quite as weepy as Barbara Walters. And she doesn't even have the relative gravitas of a Deborah Norville. About as close as PMS has come to actual news reporting are the colonoscopies she subjects America to each year. And I think I speak for the entire nation when I say, honey, those emails that say, oh, I can't even read this. That's a little off. What this media monkey really does is mimic what other media monkeys do, but with even less content. In place of pseudo-content, she gives us pseudo-charm, so it all kind of works out. For most of us, she's the most annoying thing in the morning since the alarm clock. And unfortunately, no snooze button can make her go away, at least not permanently. So charmless is PMS in the AM that by comparison, Matt Lauer is Hugh Grant and Al Roker is Carrie. While today's show viewers ask themselves, where in the world is Matt Lauer? I ask myself, what in the world is Katie Couric? And why in the world does NBC leave this living hangnail on the air? I suppose the role this monkey plays best is that of cheerleader for Team Trotsky. But consider the competition. Eleanor Roosevelt is dead. Jane Fonda's skin is so stretched out she's afraid to smile. And Barbara Streisand can't memorize the routines. 30-some years after getting her certificate of attendance from Dukakis High, our little marmoset remains the perkiest critter on the left side of the sidelines. Just watch her flirty, flighty method of interviewing. Whether she's chatting with Michael Moore or Idi Amin, our little surrender monkey will look longingly into her guest's eyes, twirl her hair, and giggle like a schoolgirl with a crush. When conducting interviews with Hillary Clinton, I have expected to ask the senator between questions about foreign policy if she thinks Barack Obama is cute and if Bill is as dreamy at home as he is on camera. It's interesting that I mentioned Barack Obama in 05. I didn't even know I knew who he was. That's amazing. I think Katie Couric learned her technique at the Torquemada School of Interviewing, Spanish Harlem branch. Mere seconds after suffering through her piercing, high-pitched chatter, guests will give away anything, trade secrets, fashion tips, bedroom intimacies, Osama bin Laden's home address, anything just to get her to quiet down. But what makes this marmoset especially annoying is her moral preening on issues about which she understands less than zero, less even than George Clooney. And all the while, she pretends to be just another soccer mom. Right. And Uday and Kusei's pop was just another soccer dad. PMS's haute couture haughtiness was best seen when she began complaining to co-host Matt Lauer last summer about gas prices. It's ridiculous. I had to take out a loan to fill up my minivan. It's crazy. With her $15 million a year salary, she could have been commuting to Pluto and back without worrying about gas prices. In truth, she frets about anything only to the degree that she can pin it on Bush, which is just about everything from the temperature of the globe to Sean Penn's two-pack-a-day habit. Anyway, you get the picture. It was ahead of its time. You know, I was thinking about that. I know of another host who complains about filling up his tank like he's just another guy with a six-pack at night. But he's not talking about his minivan. He's talking about his Gulfstream. And his name is Wallbanger. Just one of the guys, you know? It's the Savage Nation.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE. 855-400-7282. Savage. Warning, the Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, the Savage Nation. And here he is, Michael Savage.
Well, you made it to Wednesday. How do you like that? This is hour number three of the Savage Nation for Wednesday, October 9, 2013. You know, before I tell you what stories are on michaelsavage.com, Pelosi led a crowd in the mall, the National Mall, not of veterans, not of World War II veterans, not of Vietnam veterans, but Nancy Pelosi led a crowd of non-citizens, illegal aliens, rabble-rousers demanding citizenship with si se puede, si se puede.
I want to join my colleague thank the president for enabling us to gather here.
Si se puede, si se puede, si se puede.
Well, Nancy, let me tell you something. There are 50 million of us who say, si se puede. Yes, we can. Yes, we can. Yes, we can. We can deport all the illegal aliens and all of the traitors in Congress. Si se puede. Yep, that's what's going on. It's beyond belief. The White House and the IRS exchange confidential taxpayer information. Take a look at the nightmare feminist in charge of enforcing Obamacare at the IRS. I have some choice words I could give you. She's wearing stage earrings, stage pearls, and a stage smile. But if you strip away the stage pearls and the stage smile, she'd be central casting for those who manned certain recreational camps in World War II. This is the Savage Nation. Meanwhile, Obama's ratings are down to 37%. 37%. The lowest in his history, and yet he's acting like the Caesar he thinks he is. Yep, it goes on and on and on. Let's go to michaelsavage.com now, home of Borders, Language, and Culture. Please click on the free newsletter that will arrive in your email every day. It's in the middle of the page, michaelsavage.com. You just click on it and you get a newsletter, free Savage Nation daily newsletter. Click here. Real easy. What's on the website? Let's see. Wow, more bad news. Savage tops digital radio rankings again. Number one, beat Rush. Obama approval plummets into the 30s. Meanwhile, Boehner and Reid share a dismal 18% favorability rating. The United States has decided not to scale back aid to Egypt, but to... Isn't diversity grand? Isn't it great that the NFL is going to meet with Indian tribes about Redskins' name instead of asking them how they can improve their math skills? And you wonder how a small pack of Marxists could take over a nation without the people even understanding what's happened. Answer, there are no reporters left. You heard there's no England anymore. Well, how about there's no America anymore? Given the sad state of our Congress today, that someone as deranged as Pelosi could be on the National Mall at a time when they closed it to Vietnam vets and World War II vets and opens it up to non-citizens, at a time like this that she is not arrested for a thing like that, I decided that instead I'm going to simply satirize Nancy Pelosi and others on the show today in the great spirit of John Dryden. The true end of satire is the amendment of vice by correction. And he who writes honestly is no more an enemy to the offender than the physician to the patient when he prescribes harsh remedies to an inveterate disease. Now, I realize that that was written in 1681 by John Dryden when people were far more literate than the college uneducated masses that we have in America today who probably didn't even understand what I just said. But nevertheless, I know what I just said, and that is about satire, and it's an introduction to a book I wrote many years ago in 2006, published in 06, called The Political Zoo. And the kids, the young men who worked for me said, Michael, why don't you just go back to that book and pick the people who are ruining America today? So I'll start with Nancy Pelosi, leftist irrationalist. Now remember, I have a background as a biologist, so I had to use Latin binomials for all of these characters in the political zoo. Nancy Pelosi I called the distempered rainbow parakeet, the distempered rainbow parakeet, and her Latin binomial is leftist irrationalis. Let me read it to you, see what you think. With its large beak and small head, the distempered rainbow parakeet caws with great frequency and volume, yet lacks mental capacity to emit anything original or intelligent. Fortunately, the bird has developed an adaptation that helps it to cope with this problem. The beak's large upper mandible is notched for its little bird foot to fit in. Decked with bright blue plumage, the female of the species mates for life usually with strong and crafty males, capable of building large nests and stashing a surplus of fruits and nuts therein. Not only does this preserve the pair from want, but also frees the female to spend nearly all of its waking hours bobbing through the jungle, screeching at any animals not of its flock, and pretending to care about those who have no nests and food at all. Although its original habitat was Maryland, the breed has since migrated to the San Francisco Bay Area, where it aggressively climbed a political pecking order. Today it can be found both in California and Washington, D.C., chirping away mindlessly in either environ. Curiously, aside from its lower-than-average intelligence, the parakeet suffers from one prominent congenital disability. It is only capable of flapping about in circles, primarily because it is born with only a left wing. So anyway, that's the story. Here we are. The tourist was killed in Washington, and you forgot it already. What can you do about it? It's a cover-up job, so I'm not going to talk about it again. You know, the battle going on in Washington. You know why many of you are tuning out? You turn in talk radio. I listened to it in the car today on the way to lunch with a young guy who works, and I asked him, he's 25, and I said to him, what are you listening to? He said, I can't even follow it. I don't know what they're talking about, and I don't know which side is a bigger liar. That's what he said, and he's a conservative kid. His father's a policeman. He grew up listening to me, and he didn't know what they were talking about. He was listening to Wallbanger with an unknown guest, and he didn't know what they were saying. And he said it reminded him of a teacher who invites another teacher into the class as a guest, and then they have a conversation amongst themselves, and they forget their students in the room. That's what talk radio is becoming. A host talking to a guest, and the audience is left out of it. You understand why we're having a problem? So I could do entertainment, but I don't really want to do that now. So someone asked me, well, let's go to Tom on KSFO. Tom, you related to the political zoo on Nancy Pelosi. What's your comment, please?
My favorite of your books is The Political Zoo, so I've just been chomping at the bit for the opportunity to give you the zoological name for Obama. Teleprompterus recitus.
Not bad. And what would the bird be? The big-eared what? The big-eared toucan?
Probably an albatross.
Oh, that is not bad. The big-eared albatross. Okay, let's make a note for the revision. The big-eared albatross. I would name him Marxus Canis. I'd give him a Latin binomial. Marxus Canis would be good. But I like yours, Teleprompterus recitus. Tom, thank you. So you still remember the political zoo, huh?
Yeah, I pick it up when I need a good laugh because, you know, just each section's only a couple pages. You can read it, get a good laugh, and...
Okay, so here's. Let's open it up to the audience. Which new political characters would you add to the political zoo if you were saying Savage? Add this one or that one, and what would they be named? Phone number is 855-407-2822, 855-407-SAVAGE. Here's one for you, Tom, and everyone else. What do you think I will call John Boehner in the new book, The Political Zoo, if I ever do one? I would name John Boehner Mantanus Ineffectus. Mantanus Ineffectus. I don't know what kind of bird he would be, but how could you not like John Boehner with that nice consistent tan, that gravelly voice, the nice suits? John Boehner reminds me somewhat of like a bygone era, which is why he's comforting. He's like comfort food. He's sort of like the television series called Mad Men. He's like an advertising man from the 60s, John, isn't he? That's why he's likable to the average person. You can ridicule them all you want, but you know what? I don't know if anyone could do a better job. You know, you get up there and you start screaming and yelling at the other side, and what are you going to get? You think the people are going to follow you? You'll get the people who believe in you to follow you, but you're going to alienate that huge core of independents who right now has turned on Obama. The independents have turned on the Democrats. Believe it or not, Obama's ratings are in the toilet. They're the lowest they've ever been, and for good reason. The reason his ratings are low is because he made one critical error. His meanness came through. The Grinch came through. When he closed the National Mall to the World War II vets and to the Vietnam vets, it spread through the country like a prairie fire. And then when he opened it up yesterday to the Si Se Puede organizations, you wait and see what it is tomorrow. The people hate him. They don't like what he's doing to this country. They don't like that he's shutting the government down. They got it that he's doing it. Never mind what the fools in the media are trying to tell you. Be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
It is the Savage Nation. Taking a slight satirical turn tonight, given that you're all exhausted to death from the same old rhetoric, as important as it may be, talk radio is not a history lesson. Talk radio is not a political organ. Talk radio is not supposed to be boring. Talk radio is supposed to be entertaining. At the end of the day, never forget that talk radio is an entertainment medium. Now, either you have the E gene or you don't have the E gene. I was born with the E gene, and some aren't. And those who don't have it should never, ever try it. Ever. I heard WB try it today. It was painful. It was painful. That's all I can tell you. By the way, a poll was taken on a small station in Medford, Oregon, of whether they should keep the banger, the WB, on or replace him with me comes January. And as of airtime, I was winning 52% to what, 45, 48, something like that. They want me on the station. If you're in the market for W Medford, WMED, you can vote to move Savage to the live slot if you wish. I mean, you want to turn it into a contest. Anyway, if you want to join us on the satirical road tonight, here's one. John Kerry, Flipper Floppus. The Flipper family of toothless dolphins luxuriate in the protected coves of Cape Cod, Martha's Vineyard, and the south of France. This species has no established habitat or pattern of behavior, but rather follows the prevailing current, usually in the shallowest water it can find. Thus, it has found the perfect home for itself in Wishy, Washington. When domesticated, the toothless dolphin is capable of performing amazing tricks, most notably the double flip-flop, which has both amazed and flabbergasted onlookers for years. Not particularly motivated to fend for itself, it has a talent for riding in the wake of creatures with deeper pockets, particularly females of the flipper phylum. Scientists have recently discovered that the toothless dolphin is not as advanced in intelligence as the general populace once believed, ranking well below even below average elephants and less than the average donkey, hard as that is to believe. Whether he's shilling for Al Jazeera or pandering to moveon.orgasm, you can bet that when the political winds hit him in the tail, John Flipper Kerry, the toothless dolphin, will flip around like a weather vane and whistle the stars and stripes forever. That's not bad. Anyway, that's John Kerry. It's good. Some of it's good. Some of it's not, you know, relevant anymore. It could be rewritten. I'm not going to rewrite it. You know, I can't go over old ground. Who would you like me to do? Harry Reid, Mousei Pugilisticus? I won't be visiting Las Vegas in the near future, but I will read the Harry Reid entry. I will not be going to any fights at the MGM Grand in the near future. Harry Reid, Mousei Pugilisticus. The Nevada desert kangaroo rat earned its name from its repeated jumping from position to position and its rodent-like zeal for subversion and destruction. The kangaroo rat is one of the most lethal animals in the political zoo, not for anything it actually does, but for the progressive plague it spreads that is known to paralyze and destroy the body politic. Scientists haven't yet confirmed if the disease is caused by the special interest fleas carried by the rat or if it's found in the odorous policy droppings that it leaves behind. I could see why John Dryden had to write what he wrote in 1681, which I put at the front of the book. So let me read that again. The true end of satire is the amendment of vice by correction. And he who writes honestly is no more an enemy to the offender than the physician to the patient when he prescribes harsh remedies to an inveterate disease. Yeah, not bad. Now, who else is in the news today? Ruth Bader Ginsburg is in the news. If you can believe it, she's actually still on the Supreme Court. If you can believe it, she is still on the Supreme Court. Now, I gave her this name, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, litigatus agitatus. Ruth Bader Ginsburg, litigatus agitatus. The Bader Gator, a dangerous breed of the combative Litty Gator family, is notorious for clamping down on its constitutional prey and dragging it below the water in a death roll to drown out our freedoms and to feast on them at a later time where no one can see. Native to the legal swamps of New York, this unseemly creature is easily the most aggressively progressive animal on the political zoo's kangaroo court and regularly tries to subvert the zoo's rules. Strangely, the Bader Gator seems to long even for the brutal controls of foreign zoos and circuses, where animals, particularly elephants, are regularly abused. The Bader Gator is known to have an extraordinarily long lifespan. Not bad. When Bill Clinton nominated Ruth Bader Ginsburg to replace Byron White as Associate Justice of the Supreme Court in 1993, there was very little protest by Senate Republicans, despite the fact that they were about to confirm one of America's most radical attorneys to the highest court of the land. In fact, she breezed through the confirmation process, and in less than 6 weeks was approved 96-3. Even at that time, her extremist views were well known. The Bader Gator had served as the chief litigator for the Women's Rights Project of the ACLU and served on their National Board of Directors. During her tenure, this board called for the repealing of laws against child pornography and the decriminalization of adult child sex. If NAMBLA had a pinup girl, an oxymoronic concept, I admit, the Bader Gator would probably be it. It's a horrible image regardless. Shall I go on? So don't think I don't know politically where they stand. I know exactly who they are. I've got their histories in here. But it's done with a different flavor than I think people are. They're not into it today. I think they're more didactic today than even in 2005, to be frank. I think there's less room for humor than there is, than there was. Even, what, 05 to now? When is that? Nine? I can't even do the math. 8 years ago. What a long time this has been. Bill Maher, loudmouthous liberalitis. The Southern California screeching weasel is a timid but noisy creature, keen on annoying many of the other animals in the zoo. Although often posing as a predator, this weak, mostly herbivorous rodent has teeny teeth, no claws, shrunken reproductive organs, and wholly relies on the support of more productive animals for its meager existence. Its natural habitat is primarily the dark and smoky corners of little mines. Nobody can match. Nobody's as good as when I want to be good, when I have the mind for it.
Savage.
The last one now that I'll do from the reading of the Political Zoo, the cover's interesting. It shows me as the zookeeper, a caricature of me as the zookeeper, and each person is caricatured in this book. I should reissue it probably. Some of it's good. John McCain, Stockholmus blemishii. Stockholmus blemishii. The turncoat mole is a crafty creature that is quick to switch pack allegiances without any observable reason to do so. It regularly eats from the lower ends of the food chain, but constantly harasses any other animal choosing to do so. In 2000, the turncoat mole was all but exterminated from the national scene when it tried to root itself into the hostile habitat of South Carolina. It retreated to Arizona and is now making gestures to go national once again. This was, remember, when this book was written. The turncoat mole sometimes hunts in tandem with the Senate snakes, with at least a few moles being eaten for dinner in exchange for looking bipartisan. Perhaps its chief natural weakness is that it is blind to how its burrowing undermines the principles of the party pack. It's interesting. Yeah, well, you see, we knew who the turncoat mole was back even in 2005, and I know many of you are sensitive to what he was put through. And that doesn't matter. It doesn't give him a pass. And you could join the conversation by calling 855-472-8255 and tell me which current political figure you would like to see me put in a revised edition of the Political Zoo and what their Latin binomial might be. Finally, we will continue with one last one at the moment. None other than the leprechaun, Bill O'Reilly, who I named, and now you know why I've never been invited on Fox News since. I have a way of making friends in high places, I got to tell you that. One thing you got to say about old Mike is old Savage knows how to make friends in high places. And now you understand why O'Reilly never forgave me and never ever permitted anyone of the leg crossers to have me on a Fox News after the Political Zoo came out. Because I called him the following, Lecheris leprechaunus. The American porcupine is a large terrestrial rodent, well protected by its prickly exterior. When challenged, it erects its quills, swings its stout tail, and threatens to release the barbed tips into challenger's skin. Known for its grunting or groaning delivery, the porcupine is active mainly at night and is found occasionally on televisions in the sagebrush plains of the West. Also, according to legal filings that were settled, the American porcupine will occasionally try to find cable station staff willing to play games like Fetch the Loofah as part of its bizarre mating ritual. Everyone's forgotten the loofah incident. I forgive him for it, truthfully. I don't forgive him for being an obnoxious dictatorial jerk bent on hectoring and humiliating anyone he doesn't agree with. In that sense, he's no different than everyone else in the media. From his cage at the No Spine Zone, he lets loose like a porcupine on Percocet. With his trademark smugness and patented sneer, regularly welcoming movers and shakers from the Beltway and beyond, threatening to boycott entire countries, barking nonsense about everything from the war in Iraq to the war on Christmas. This newsy numbskull maintains that his dubious popularity is due to his, pardon while I clear my throat, common sense approach to politics and culture. No, Porky, I think people watch your show for the same reason they go to NASCAR races, to see the wrecks. In the world of serious political commentary, the O'Reilly factor is no factor at all. Okay, yeah, there's a bit of whatever in here, vitriol, I admit, but that's what satire is supposed to be. Let's see, one last one here. It's about the sexual harassment that they settled. Since settling the lawsuits, the O'Reilly factor is more a no-skin zone than a no-spin zone. But until then, a word of warning to all you ladies out there in the Savage Nation. If you phone O'Reilly's show during porcupine mating season, which lasts from about January to December, do your best to sound like Janet Reno, avoid the subjects of Greek food and cleansing devices, and above all, steer clear of the porcupine's biggest turn-on, namely himself. A porcupine in heat is a dangerous beast. If he loves you, you'll be able to count the ways. In fact, you'll be able to count them by the thousands while you pluck them the morning after. Oh, I can see why I've never been allowed on Fox News ever since. I had no idea. I didn't know it was this personal. 855-472-82 is the phone number. It's the Savage Nation. Cantor, Obama quit mocking. Cantor is back again. He left the deli in Beverly Hills for a day to speak again. Does Cantor own Cantor's Deli? Is he related to that? No, it's with a C, not a K. I don't even know who Eric Cantor is. For a while, he was a big player. And then he disappeared into the woodwork. Eric Cantor, a Republican from Virginia. They have to remind us this from the Washington Post. Eric Cantor, a Republican from Virginia, is the House Majority Leader. You hear how fallen the Republican Party is? They have to tell us who he is. So now they're quoting him all of a sudden. He came back from Beverly Hills where he supervised the roasting of the pastrami in the cookers at Cantor's Deli. It's not the best. Alan Jerry's is much better on Rodeo Drive. They make a good gefilte fish, Alan Jerry. I go there once a year. I have the old world foods. I have the salt attack where the feet look like I was. Man, that food is so bad, but it's delicious. Once, how do people eat ethnic foods to begin with? All ethnic food is poison. Wherever you go around the world, the reason ethnic food is poison is simple. It's not that it's inherently poison. It's because most ethnic foods that you think are your ethnic diets are not your ethnic diets. For example, this was a big topic in 1981 in my book, The Skeptical Nutritionist. So let's say you're Italian. So you think, oh, I eat Italian food. It's the food of my ancestors. No, the food of your ancestors was probably a whole wheat noodle with some vegetables that they grew in the garden and maybe a little cheese. They didn't kill the animal that they got the cheese from. They ate almost no meat because they couldn't afford to kill the livestock. That was your ethnic diet. If you're Jewish, your ethnic diet is closer to a Taliban who eats Southern Arabian food than it is to a Cantor's delicatessen. The Taliban have a more traditional Jewish diet than do the Jews of New York and Chicago. Why? Because pastrami is not a Jewish food. Corned beef is not a Jewish food. Lox is not a Jewish food. These are 19th century Polish holiday foods. Nothing to do with Jewishness or ethnicity. I would say that the Jewish ethnic diet accounted for more early deaths than any other factor in American culture. Probably more than cigarettes. And this is an important story about the time. Stand Your Ground revisions win early approval. A Senate panel took the first step toward amending the Stand Your Ground self-defense law, approving a bill that would revamp neighborhood watch programs. That's a loaded set of dice right there. Whoa. That's a biggie. That's a big one. Here's a headline on Miami Herald. UM Hospital overbilled Medicare $3.7 million. University of Miami Hospital will have to refund $3.7 mil to Medicare after a federal order to the hospital's billing found the hospital overbilled in 2009 and 2010, blah, blah, blah. U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. So even hospitals are into the game. Even. Hospitals are businesses, that's all. It's a business. And like any other business, it's profit versus loss. So if they can throw a cancer patient out early, they throw them out early. If they can overbill Medicare, they overbill Medicare. You know, this is business today. Was it ever any different? I don't really know. I don't really know if business was ever any different. Not every businessman's a crook. I know some very wealthy people who produce valid products. They've worked very hard their whole lives, and they're very wealthy men. They never robbed a dime from anyone. So you can't generalize and say that every businessman is a crook. You just can't do that. That's a baby way of looking at things. Now, I'll tell you who is a crook. The government is crooked. It's a crooked institution. The longer I watch government, the more I know it's basically a criminal enterprise. They provide services, yes, some of which we need, yes. But by and large, you know and I know the private sector could do it far more efficiently at a lower cost. And you also know, you don't have to look any farther than the U.S. Postal Service. The end of the day, these fume-spewing little trucks come down the street delivering third-class and fourth-class mail. Why do we need them? In an age of the Internet, in an age of email, in an age of express mail, what do we need the Postal Service for? I have nothing against postal workers. My uncle was a postman after he came out of the war. He was lucky to get a job in the Postal Service. He opened a deli and failed. He couldn't run a deli on 14th Street near Stuyvesant Town, so the next best thing was to become a postman. That's not a put-down. He tried to run a deli. He couldn't. He had a deli on 14th Street across from Stuyvesant Town. He passed away. He came out of the war, served in Japan. Gave me the bayonet. He gave me I was a little kid. He gave me a samurai sword. And I took the wrapping. I ruined it. I swear to God, I was into like... See, I once wrote about this. Obama takes clocks apart like a kid, but he can't put them back together again. I took things apart as a child. As I've gotten older, I don't take things apart anymore. Obama is the eternal destroyer. Everything the man touches, he takes apart. He can't put it back together again. This is like Humpty Dumpty. He takes the world's greatest medical care system in the world apart, and like Humpty, he can't put Humpty together again. The medical system is like Humpty Dumpty to him. He doesn't care. He breaks things. And he enjoys breaking things. He looks like a happy kid breaking things. Opened the deli, crossed from Stuyvesant Town. We went in there. The thing you did as a family in those days was when a relative opened the business, we were immigrants, basically. We all went in, and everyone bought like $50, $100 worth of groceries from him. So, you know, like a Goodwill. You didn't just give. So we bought like this and that, the canned goods, took them home. That's like to start the business. It was a good luck thing. I loved it. He had a certain, like, roast turkey, and I could taste it to this day. Very good French bread. Didn't last. Had no knack for business. 2-3 years, bingo. He was on the beach again. He had to go into become a postman. Again, nothing wrong with it. If you can't open a business, you become a government worker. 855-407-282. I want to go to some of the great callers I have, the best callers in the radio business. Call the Savage Nation. They wait for a long time. We do not have a bank of numbers that we call for the guys to call me a great American or tell me they love the show or come up with the jargon to make me feel better. WKIM, Brian, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, I just wanted to thank you for being pretty much the only American left that'll stand up for America, specifically with this execution in Washington, D.C., where you brought to light the fact that this was an assassination and nobody would talk about it for a week.
Now, I had it on the show when it happened Thursday. I did it Friday. I couldn't sleep over the weekend. I had it on Monday. I said it looks like an execution to me, and I was shocked to hear her sister say it looked like an execution to her. And people were attacking me for even bringing it up, remember, when I ran this for 3 days in a row?
I do remember that, but the thing is, you were right on the money, and people are just now starting to realize that, but I doubt you're giving any credit for trying to bring any of this to light. Why do you think that is?
Well, there's a lot of reasons why I'm ignored. The primary reason is that when you're the lead sled dog, people are only looking at your behind, and they can't stand what they're seeing, so therefore they put you down. And as the lead sled dog in talk radio, I'm used to it. It's that simple. Of course they hate the lead sled dog. What should they do? It may not be in gross numbers that I'm the leader, but in ideas, nobody can beat me. And on the Internet, I mean, it speaks for itself. The show is number one as a streaming talk show. That is a younger dynamic. The younger people who are smarter generally in some ways or faster, let's say, in their desire for ideas and news are listening to me. So that's good enough for me. The rest will shake out in 2014, I hope, and we'll see if people finally come to understand what I've been trying to give them and the actual national treasure that I am. All the years of being an author, plant collector, scientists, et cetera. I mean, I've written some, I've done some wonderful things in my life. Personally, I'm not a great person, but in terms of my accomplishments, I'm very proud of what I've achieved on this earth. It's been through very hard work, and I hope that the world will come to understand that this is not just a casual throwaway radio show. There's a lot of, let us say, seriousness behind the humor. I'll be right back on the Savage Nation.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
What new characters can we add to the... No, it isn't still available. People think that I'm like the other host. I'm not peddling a book, no. No, you cannot buy the Savage toupee. No, you can't buy the conservative shoes. You can't buy the conservative floor mat. No, we don't have a conservative nail file kit. No coffee mugs, no mats, no nothing. Nothing. I don't want to sell anything, personally. Unless they're an advertiser on the show, that's another story. Or when I have a new book, yes. But now that I'm mentioning it, I'm actually going to put out a CD for Christmas, now that I think about it, with all of my favorite stories in a two-disc set. It'll be up in a couple of, I think by November something. All the family stories, Dead Man's Pants, they're all going to be read by me. And in a very inexpensive two-disc set for the holidays. But other than that, there's no point to it. How much money does a person actually need? 855-400-7282 is the Savage Nation. We've been playing around on the Savage Nation in a sort of satirical manner where I was basically reading from a book I did in 2005, not available, not for sale, not selling it, entitled The Political Zoo. In fact, it's strange. It was not one of my bestsellers, but it was probably one of my best books. And I took political figures. I gave them an animal's name in the zoo, the Savage Zoo, the Political Zoo, and then a Latin binomial. So, for example, I'll read one that I wrote back in 05, Jimmy Carter. Everyone remembers him, right? I named him Marxist Peanut Farm Era. The big-tooth muskrat is a particularly nasty rodent that, while indigenous to the southeastern United States, is known to appear as an endemic type in San Francisco, Boston, Manhattan, Austin, and as far north as Toronto, Canada, wherever socialists of the species gather. Though rarely productive in its first few stages of life, the big-tooth muskrat is never sedentary and develops into more of a nuisance the older it gets. It is prone to attack fellow rodents to demonstrate its continued potency and destroys the natural balance of power in the ecosystem by inexplicably siding with vicious foreign predators against its own species. This rodent is never shrill, preferring to disarm his enemies with a non-display of his muted colors and feeds primarily on the preys of giant rats. A cunning beast, the big-toothed muskrat, will build an occasional shelter for other animals, at least when photographers are present. This way, when it helps steal what other animals have worked hard to forage and disperses it to those animals too dull or slothful to forage for themselves, no one will question the muskrat's basic instincts. Mating for life, this critter bonds sexually with the opposite gender solely to reproduce, joining with the female of the species just once or twice in a lifetime. God. That's so close to probably what's true that the satire rings true. Most people consider James Earl Carter good and decent. He doesn't drink. He doesn't gamble. He's been married to the same female for the past 70 years. And unlike our most recent Democratic president, that was then, this big-tooth muskrat doesn't even smoke cigars. As he told Playboy magazine so many years ago, the only place he's lusted is in his heart, and certainly not in the small galley of the Oval Office. Besides, who would have him? It's largely because of those qualities, highly unusual on the side of the forest where any permanent mating with a female is becoming newsworthy, that he was elected the 39th president of the United States. Still, the fact that he is good, decent, and married to the same mate for umpteen years should not qualify him for the highest office in the land. If this were all it took to be elected president, I say we should all vote for my next-door neighbor, Carl. He's all of that, and more. My neighbor doesn't smoke, drink, or batter rabbits. Plus, he's tolerant. If all the other women in the world looked like my neighbor Carl's wife, Marge, Rosalind Carter would be on Baywatch. Carl, bless his heart, calls Marge his Italian bombshell, but it could be because of the pockmarks on her face. In truth, She looks less like Sophia Loren than she does Danny DeVito, though to be fair, he's got better legs and is cleaner shaven. Marge, however, does have a common touch. When she becomes First Lady, she'll replace Nancy Reagan's China with some good old-fashioned U.S. Navy plates. I actually like U.S. Navy plates that you can count on. So let's all get out and stump for neighbor Carl. He's a saint already. Let's make him president. Carl would surely govern better than the pain from planes. With the mighty Muskrat at the helm, the United States was tossed into a tailspin of gross overspending, monumental inflation, and an oil and gasoline crisis that made even the post-Katrina madness seem like a bargain hunter's paradise. This is pretty good. In fact, some of it is still relevant. This is The Savage Nation. I'm reading from an old book of mine called The Political Zoo. I think you can only find it on the internet. And some of the characters are no longer with us. They've gone to heaven, I suppose. Look at the people who've passed away. Arlen Specter, no longer here. Howard Stern, no longer here. No longer here in the sense that no one knows who he is anymore. At the time, Howard Stern was on the radio. Now no one knows where he is. Apparently he's on a game show somewhere, but he got my go to the point that I put him in here. Let me see what I wrote about. I don't remember. Who remembers him? I actually liked Howard Stern when he first came along. Then he became too impressed with himself. He became awful. Schlocko Jocko. This colorful, gangly creature is a mutant strain of the Long Island parrot, or LIP species, bred accidentally on one of the island's many toxic waste sites. The LIP has an uncanny ability to mimic the most vile comments that it hears and play them back with an added layer of verbal sewage. And we'll end it right there.
Savage.